Hour number four, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Live at Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Washington Capitals coming up tonight. We'll have pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. D-Mac is going to get some maintenance before coming back for the pregame show. So Chase McCabe, Willie Donick taking it home for you here on a Thursday edition of the show. And Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus joins us now. Mike, how's it going?
Going great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And I'm going to start very simple, because here in Nashville, we've obviously been talking about the Tennessee Titans being at 2-3, and we just spent our last segment discussing, you know, some of the wins that they left on the table ended up being losses. From your point of view, the national point of view, how do you look at this team here in Tennessee right now?
I mean, they're such an intriguing team, because it seems like whenever they're, you know, supposed to win a game, things fall apart. Whenever they're not supposed to win a game, all of a sudden things start to click. And I think it really starts with the signal caller. It's an offensive defensive roster. They don't have a ton of holes outside of the quarterback position in Marcus Mariota, where he's just so up and down and, you know, inconsistent game to game. You're not sure which guy you're going to get. I just think that, to me, is the biggest sort of thing with this Titans team, is how to get him to be more consistent. How to, you know, what can you rely on him to do game in and game out that can win you games? That, to me, is their biggest question mark still.
Well, and it's something that we've obviously discussed here on this show. And if you look at his stats, 2.5 seconds, if he gets rid of the ball in under 2.5 seconds, that's when Marcus Mariota is at his best. He's going to complete passes. He's scoring touchdowns. He looks like the legit franchise quarterback. But if he takes longer than that, that to me, he's going through his progressions, which takes him time. He doesn't have the offensive line to give him the protection. That's where he struggles. And with this offensive line, the way that it's built right now, he doesn't have a lot of time, and he's struggling.
That's almost the conundrum of it, in terms of he's athletic. You know, he can run, you know, 4.6 or whatever. He looks like he should be in this Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes sort of mold of get him outside the pocket, let him make plays, except for that's not actually when he's at his best. He doesn't make a ton of, you know, good high-level throws outside the pocket. He has not necessarily been great at that over the course of his career. He's much more comfortable operating in a quick passing, timing, accuracy sort of based offense. And so I think the more he can do of that, the more he can do things like RPOs to help him out, get quick passes for him, the better. Because, like you mentioned, the offensive line has struggled in recent, you know, it's sort of fallen off in recent years, and he's been under more pressure now than he probably has been at any point in his career.
In your opinion, if they were to make a change to Ryan Tannehill, which I truly don't think they're going to anytime soon, does it really look any different?
Honestly, no. Ryan Tannehill and Marcus Mariota are very similar quarterbacks in terms of Tannehill's pocket presence is actually probably worse. He's going to take more sacks even than Mariota does. So I don't think that's the right guy. I mean, it's better than some alternatives could be at the backup position, but I think there's a reason why no one else is going to treat him as anything other than a backup this offseason.
Mike, we've spent a lot of time trying to figure out what's the deal on the offensive line. How much better can it get with Taylor Lewan back in there? Once he gets in the groove, so to speak, they've also had a lot of issues at right guard. But what are you seeing with the way you guys grade, in particular, on the offensive line? And I want to start with Roger Saffold, because that's somebody that they were counting on heavily. But anytime a guy changes teams, he's paid big money, you expect a lot, but sometimes it takes time, I guess, to mesh with your new group.
Yeah, he has not been even close to the guy we saw last year in L.A. I think he's top five graded left guard for us that season. Now, they do a lot in terms of play action, in terms of trying to protect that offensive line. But even still, in obvious passing situations, he was still so much better last year than we saw him this year. So that is obviously concerning, but I think the track record of him, I think at some point, sort of the light switch will flip. He'll start to see better play from him as the season wears on.
What about Nate Davis? I know it's early. He's only played a couple of games, but he's the guy it looks like they're going to give every opportunity to go grab that job at right guard. What do you see from him in terms of a ceiling? Can he get the job done there?
That one is interesting to me, because we were big fans of his coming out. Where they drafted him, we were even higher on him than where he ended up getting selected. but with the caveat of he needs to completely rework basically his pass set. I love his hands, love his, you know, power, but his butt was almost touching the ground there at Charlotte in his pass sets, and they needed from the ground up completely reworked. And one off season is not nearly enough to basically rework the guy's whole, you know, the way he pass protects. So I think as the season wears on, he'll definitely improve, but I'm not sure he's necessarily, I didn't think he was going to be ready to play in the NFL at all year one. So I get why they're, you know, throwing him in there, because they don't have a ton of better options. But he definitely was not sort of NFL ready, if you want to talk about that. He just did not have that. He had to be completely reworked in terms of his technique.
What effect do you think Taylor Lewan will have on the entire grade of the line over time? Because they clearly need to get better as a group for them to be effective.
Oh, it's huge. I think any time you don't have to protect one of your tackles when you know you can rely on him, that just does a lot for you as an offensive coordinator. Does a lot for an offense. You can send help elsewhere along that line. He is, you know, easily their best offensive lineman. And, you know, anytime I feel like a guy does get suspended for PEDs, all of a sudden they have a career year when they come back. So we can look forward to that as well. So I do think that Taylor Lewan, that presence there will go a long way, even if we're not going to see the effects of it, you necessarily aren't as obvious as maybe some other positions would be.
I think, as you sort of said, the Titans are hard to predict. They sometimes play their best when it's not expected. So they've got Denver on the surface from afar. You always say it's hard to go to Denver and win, but they've obviously had a lot of troubles. And at the same time, they shocked a lot of people by getting a win over the Chargers last week. So how big are the issues in Denver right now?
I think Denver just has a pretty rough roster top to bottom. I think they are not. They're in a similar boat to the Titans, where the quarterback position is you have no clue what you're getting any week from that. And they have a similarly porous offensive line as well. So I do think there'll be plays to be made for the Titans defense. I think it's definitely a game they should win and should win handily. But like you said, you don't know which Titans team you're getting week in and week out this year, but they're just on paper a much more talented roster there in Tennessee.
Mike Renner with us from Pro Football Focus, and you know, we know here the defense is the bright spot on this Titans team. I don't think they're the best defense by far, but you know, they're still pretty good and able to cover up some deficiencies by the offense. Pass rush, though, continues to be an area in which the Titans are trying to improve. There's a report that Jeffrey Simmons, the first-round pick, could be activated next week, could start practicing. We could see him in a game here very soon. How much do you think he would change that Titans defensive front?
I think it'd go a long way. I'm not sure I'm going to bank on a guy who's, you know, coming off torn ACL 7 or 8 months later and him hitting the ground running as a 21 or 22-year-old, a young guy like that. I'm not sure I'm going to bank on him producing right away, but I did think he was, you know, when healthy, the second best defensive tackle in this draft class, and thought he was NFL ready physically as well. So I do like him as a prospect a lot, but I just think any guy coming from an ACL injury, I don't care, if you're Aaron Donald, you're probably not going to be the same guy just right out the game.
Mike, if you're looking into the future and next year's draft for the Titans, let's say that things continue to be status quo for this team. They finish 8-8, 9-7, somewhere in the middle like they have the last 3 years. At that point, your quarterback is still not under contract, or at least at this point. Do you think they are looking at this draft class as maybe the next signal caller?
I think you'd be crazy not to. With just the play you've seen from Mariota of his career, there's not much progression that we've seen. There's no upward trajectory in terms of, he's improved at you can point, there's not something you can necessarily point to and say, he's improved at this from years two to year five now. So I do think that you'd have to address it, especially considering it's a draft class that looks like there could be four or five guys legitimately as first-round picks. And with how valuable that position is, how good your roster is, you can't keep kicking the can with a guy like Marcus Mariota and hoping that someday he gets better just because you drafted him number two overall. It's too valuable a position to pin your hopes to a guy like that. So I do think next year, if go 8-8, it's definitely they're in the market for a QB.
Mike, if they did want to start over, just try something new, and maybe the plan would include drafting somebody, how would you, along those lines, evaluate Teddy Bridgewater in comparison to Mariota, Tannehill, and the level that they already have right now? Would he be an upgrade, or would they be better off just trying to find and try to put a lot of resources into finding an impact guy out of the draft that could help him right away?
I think it's too soon to tell if he'd necessarily be an upgrade. I think, you know, execute more, you know, drop back passing concepts probably at a higher level than Mariota. It doesn't add any sort of really much of a running threat to your offense that Mariota does, and, you know, the option looks that they have there with the Titans. So I'm not sure he's a huge upgrade, but again, he's another guy who really didn't, really was, you know, he was more of an on an upward trajectory before he ended up hurting his knee, missing a few years, and now is sort of on an upward trajectory again. There are things that you've seen him get better at, so I think from that perspective, I could foresee him being, I could foresee him by the end of the year or by, you know, start of next year being an upgrade.
Mike Renner, Pro Football Focus. Hey, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me, fellas. Have a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of good stuff there, Willie, that we'll hit on when we come back. The offensive line, I mean, that continues to be the focus of a conversation, and just how much Taylor Lewan, as he gets back acclimated into things, you know, how big of a difference is he going to make starting this weekend in Denver. We will discuss that next. It's Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase rolling right along from ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. We'll set up Preds and Caps for you here in just a little bit, but Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus just joined us, Willie, and you asked him a lot about the offensive line, which I think continues to be the starting point for a lot of the struggles on offense. And when you hear Taylor Lewan and Delanie Walker and other players saying that, you know, we have to be more consistent on offense, I believe it starts up front. And they paid a lot of money to Roger Saffold at left guard. That hasn't worked out so far. Nate Davis, the rookie, the third-round pick, he missed a training camp, and so they're trying to work him in at the right guard position. You've had Jamil Douglas that has played right guard some. Taylor Lewan finally back from a suspension, played last week. Wasn't a great debut for him against Buffalo. So the offensive line continues to have their struggles. My question that you brought up to Mike Renner, and then I'll throw it back to you, is can Taylor Lewan at least make it a little bit better as he gets acclimated, and that's going to take some pressure off of Saffold?
Mike Renner certainly thinks so. I think that's something we got from that interview. And for people that don't follow what the approach of Pro Football Focus is, they actually grade tape,
yeah,
right? They watch every individual. They give that individual a grade. And sometimes we're privy to it. That, you know, it's a paid site. So to really get down into the in-depth, you know, you can really get a lot of stuff. But a lot of people subscribe and then share little bits and pieces. And that's why it was great to have directly align into Mike and what they're seeing there. And that's why I think I tried to focus on some of these guys. To me, sometimes it's very hard to know, just asking football people, because I certainly don't.
Yeah.
If I see a guy get beat for a sack, I have to ask the question, was he supposed to have help on that play? Did he just miss his assignment? Or is there more to the story than right, what it appears to me? But that's why I thought it was interesting to ask him about Saffold, because his grades were off the chart last year, and they have been poor this year. That brings us to Lewan, right? And what
because
impact
who is he next
will Lewan
to in L.A.? Who is he next to?
A tremendous offensive tackle, right? So,
so that
the guys
that,
around you make a difference.
Yeah, that definitely makes it better.
But he's got to be better. There have been times where it looks just from where I sit, it doesn't look like he's supposed to have help. He just gets flat out beat. It was happening in the preseason, where you're not as worried about it, but it is something you notice. So, is he just not feeling comfortable? What's the story? And with Lewan back, will it get better? Mike also thought that with Lewan back, it will make an impact across the line.
Yeah,
and that hopefully will be the case,
because I think every offensive line, unless you just have the best in the league, they all have that anchor. Taylor Lewan is the anchor of the offensive line, and I agree with that, that if Taylor Lewan is playing at top level, then it's going to trickle down. I think Jack Conklin has been okay. I don't think he's still not back to the old Jack Conklin, but maybe with Lewan on the other side, that's going to help him too. So,
and who's he been playing next to, right?
Yeah,
he's had the weakest
Jamil
link
Douglas or
in the,
Nate Davis,
the revolving door over right there, and that's why we didn't focus on the interview as much on Conklin as we did on Davis, because It sounds like Davis, according to what Pro Football Focus is seeing, is more of a project that's going to take some time. So that will be the question, is can he play well enough to where they see enough that he will get better?
Yeah.
He's got the best talent, maybe the best chance for success, but there's only one way to get experience, and that's to let him go through making the mistakes. Or do they have to pull back and say he's not ready and we're better off with Dennis Kelly or Kevin Pamphile
Pamphile's going to be – that's going to be a big question. If he finally gets healthy with whatever is going on with him, and Mike Vrabel talked about that in his press conferences earlier this week, that you know they're trying to get Kevin Pamphile back. I mean, do they at that point, once he's healthy, say, all right, let's put him back in at right guard. We know what he can do, and that gives us more time to work with Nate Davis, because this team is not in a position to just have a rookie – you know, be able to work through it and make mistakes and learn from it. They have to win. And the problem with Marcus Mariota, as we have said time and time again, is, you know, when he gets rid of the football and finds that first read, he's fine. But when he needs time to go through his progression, he's got to have an offensive line that's going to be able to give him that time, and they have not been able to do that. So I don't have the time nor the patience to wait on Nate Davis to figure it out, because the quarterback needs their help.
And you're trying to win this year.
Yeah.
Right? You're not in a rebuilding
situation. You're trying to get out of 9-7. You're trying to get to 10-6 or 11-5.
So who gives you the best chance to do that right now? He did not seem to think that the Broncos, despite the win over the Chargers, are a roster to be reckoned with. Doesn't mean anything in terms of, you know, everybody can beat everybody. We have seen that throughout the league. But it made it sound like there was an opportunity there to take advantage.
Yeah. I definitely think there is, but they have to do it.
Did you not also get the sense from Mike that the limitation — this was another big part of the interview — he sees a lot of limitations with Mariota and, for that matter, Tannehill.
Yeah.
But he likes, overall, the Titans roster. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
I got a good impression. Hey, I like their roster.
He likes the roster.
Boy, it's too bad they don't have a better quarterback. It's kind of the message I got.
That's what's interesting. If they do decide to move on and they bring somebody else in here, whether it's a veteran that's out there, they draft somebody. I mean, the pipe dream that Tom Brady is like, I'm done, I'm going to play one more year, but it's going to be somewhere else, you know, whoever it may be. But if you put a quarterback that is a level above Mariota on this team, what does it look like? And because if everybody likes the roster, that's fine, but – If it's so good, I feel like it could still carry Mariota to an extent.
Well, it's got to, because that is the way they're going this year. It's not going to change. They're not going to trade for Ken Stabler or somebody. Right now, there's just nobody
that's
going to
be
an upgrade.
The right choice either, but right now.
I mean, back in the day, the Snake, he was the man, though. But you see what I'm saying. They've got to make do with what they've got. Then at the end of the season, they have to assess that. And as we laid out a lot yesterday, and I got the same impression today, you know, the other guys are going to be out there, which will include Andy Dalton, probably. It'll Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum. I mean, it's the same old, like, you would change for the sake of change, but would you really be moving forward? And then, of course, we have drafting somebody, which is fraught with all kinds of pitfalls as well. I mean, your percentages of moving up in the short term. Because remember, you feel like you got a roster that you can win with.
Yep.
So can you hit it?
You're not going
to get a rookie. I mean, some teams have.
You could. It depends on who it is, but you're not going to get Jake Fromm You're not going to get Jake Fromm with where you're going to be picking, and you're going to have to give up way too much to trade up to get somebody like that. You're not going to get Tua.
It would take a lot of assets.
I don't know if Joe Burrow is really going to be the answer either. So,
and we've got a long way to go before you really know if those guys have the tools to be able to step right into the NFL and win. Right off the bat,
If you start going down the path of, let's say, 5 weeks from now, it's pretty apparent this is going to be it. They're going to be moving on from Marcus Mariota, and we do have to start thinking about what it's going to look like next year.
Yeah, it's possible.
At that point, if I'm John Robinson, I go to Ryan Tannehill and I say, hey, we'd like to sign you for another year.
To be the placeholder, you're saying.
And just at that point, make the change, be like, this is going to be our guy. And then you draft, and you let him sit for a year.
Under that scenario, though, I would think, though, that Tannehill would have to have a chance to play this year that gave you some hope
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
You know, at some point during the year, because as we've said, Mariota has not been that bad.
No.
You know, he hasn't thrown an interception.
Thrown a
pick. He's been healthy. He's done okay. You know, it just hasn't been a big step forward.
But yet. He hasn't put the team on his shoulders to get wins.
No, and he shouldn't. You hope that the team's good enough that he doesn't have to do that very often.
Right.
But you want to see that flash.
But that's what you're looking for out of a franchise quarterback.
Well, I think we've concluded he is not that and probably won't ever be that.
Nope.
But what is the best you can hope for? Not just this year, but where does he fall into the whole mix of who are our options for next year? So we're only in week six. Right? We still don't have to make the decision. That's what's fun about these things,
well,
because every week it changes.
I said 5 weeks. That's kind of how I laid it out. So that would be at Denver this weekend, the Chargers in town next week, the Bucks in town the following week, at Carolina in week 9, week 10 Kansas City, and then you go into the bye. What does it look like after those games? That's going to be...
It'll be time to assess.
It's hard to answer that question.
Yeah.
Right now.
But and it will be time to assess at that point.
Yep.
I think that's a great time to kind of take a breath and say, all right, what does it look like? And there's a lot of ways it can go, right?
Sure.
Is there any team on that list that they could not beat? There's just no way they can beat?
The only one I would really put in that category is Kansas City.
I think there's no way they could beat them?
I'm not going to say
here.
There's. I know. And they've done it before. I mean, they've beaten Kansas City, you know, the playoffs, we know.
Sure.
I mean, they've – but – you're asking me to be realistic, and you're asking me to say, is there a team that I don't think they can beat? Kansas City is the one that pops at me of, okay, they're probably not going to.
And yet the Colts beat them in Kansas City. And the Lions, who, unless they're way better than I think they are, I think they were right on the verge of beating Kansas City. So there's just not much that separates teams. So there's a lot. If you can get things going right and just string together some wins. It happened at the end of last year, albeit against bad teams.
Right.
Right? But the Titans showed that they can string together some wins when they play their game.
They have the perfect opportunity to do that in the next 3 weeks. At Denver, which we both agree, the Titans are better than the Broncos.
Got to prove it, but yes.
Yes. Got to prove it. Got to get it done. But the Chargers right now...
Winnable.
I'd say the Titans are better than them.
Even though their history has been horrible against the Chargers.
But it's here.
Well, and it's been bad here. It doesn't seem to matter where they play them, whether it's London, L.A., San Diego, or Nashville. It hasn't gone well against the Chargers, but that really doesn't mean much when they come in here.
And then Tampa Bay. I think the Titans probably have a better roster now. You can make the argument Jameis Winston's a tick better than Mariota, but
come on.
You
got to beat the Bucs.
Yeah.
Got to beat them.
So the next 3 weeks are crucial for this team to get back to where they want to go. They got to take care of business the next 3 weeks. And then at Carolina, we'll see what they look like.
They got a little something going there.
But once you get film on Allen, you know, what is that going to look like? And then Kansas City in week 10. Here's Willie Donick. I'm Chase McCabe. It's Darren Donick and Chase live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. At Bridgestone Arena. This Friday, Jared and the GM will be broadcasting live at the 40th annual Nashville Oktoberfest, a Nashville tradition since 1980. It's not just a beer festival. Oktoberfest has something for everyone. Delicious German foods from dozens of restaurants and vendors, world-class beer from local breweries, tons of events, arts and crafts, live German music, the Deschon Derby, an enormous parade downtown, plus so much more. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit the NashvilleOktoberfest.com. We'll have more. We'll talk some baseball. You have not had a chance to weigh in on the misery that was my game with the Atlanta Braves last night.
And the unbelievable reaction in Los Angeles after what happened last night to the Dodgers. Plus, we got a big Game 5 tonight. With the Astros, who a lot of people think are the best in baseball, they're on the ropes.
Away
from getting beat. Yeah,
they're on the
ropes.
Out of there. So we'll do all that next. But first, you have a word about Lee Company.
All right, let me tell you about Lee Company. We're here at Bridgestone Arena, and if you've listened to our coverage on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, when we get the Predators coverage going with Darren at 6 o'clock after he ices his knee, you'll hear that Lee Company is a big, big part of our coverage. They're a proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators. If you come to Bridgestone Arena, if you're coming to the game tonight against the Capitals, you'll see the Lee Company display all over the place. And I'll ask the question again. have you had your heating unit checked? Because in the next few days, you might have to kick on the heat. Even if it's just at night, temperature might get down to the 40s. Is it ready to go? Have you checked in the last few months? If you haven't, it's a smart move to have them come out and check it. So get on board with Lee Company, and then when they're there, ask them about their home maintenance plan and have these checks become routine every year. You pay a small monthly fee, and you get those checkups every year, and then you get discounts if and when repairs need to be made. Here's the number to call, 567-1000 for Lee Company. That's 567-1000, or go online and make an appointment there at LeeCompany.com. That's LeeCompany.com.
Long is up, lefty to lefty, first pitch. This is hit to the left center field gap. This is going to run all the way to the wall. One run scores, a second run scores. Double for Wong, 9-0, St. Louis.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Well done, Max. Back here, Darren Donick and Chase. You heard it on 94.9 Game 2. Chris Merman on the call. I can't say what I want to say on radio, but a terrible first inning for my beloved Atlanta Braves. I know there are some other people that we know, Willie, that are hurting today.
Oh, yeah.
Because I texted them last night.
There's many. There are many in this area. Some pop out at you more than others. The Braves have a huge following, and the Cardinals have quite a bit of following here, too. So they were every bit as excited as you were disappointed as that first inning was unfolding. It's the nightmare, right? That's baseball. There's no clock. You have to get the outs.
Right.
And it just started snowballing. And that's something I have actually seen that one time before and been in your shoes. And it involves a guy that we both have a lot of admiration for, Tom Glavin.
Yeah.
The Mets in 2007, the year before 2006, they had lost in Game 7 to the Cardinals in the LCS. They came back in 2007. Had a really good year, and had a 7-game lead with 17 games to go. Lost the whole thing, but still had a chance to win on the last day of the season to get into the playoffs, at least a one-game playoff or the wild card, depending on how other things went. They had Tom Glavine on the mound against the Marlins, a bad Marlins team.
Right.
And he had that,
I think I remember
he
this.
Had that first inning where, I don't know how many, I don't think it was 10, but it was at least 8. And Shea Stadium was rocking. I mean, they had everybody going. We got Glavine on the mound. He's our man. And then, oof.
Yeah.
But you know what another thing I thought about yesterday as I was watching that inning? Our interview yesterday with Chris Domino, he talked about in big games like this, there should be a category called plays that have to be made. And this one does go down in the error column. But when you think about how grand it wasn't just any error. The Braves are still only down 1-0.
Yeah.
Marcelo Ozuna hits an 0-2 pitch to go up 1-0, and it's kind of a downer. It's like, oh, man, how do you give this guy an 0-2 pitch?
But you can come back from that.
But that's, you're still okay.
You're good.
It's one run. You're all right. Yadi Molina, who is a great player but also maybe the best candidate to hit into a double play.
I hate him.
Hits a perfect double play ball under the circumstances because he hits it hard, and he hits it right to the defender. It's an easy double play, and you're out of the inning. It's 1-0. Let's go play. And Freddie Freeman, of all people, boots it. Now, was it easy? No, because it was ripped. The ball was hit hard. So having been a first baseman, I know that it's not, you know, that's not a piece of cake, but it's a play that Freddie Freeman, who's a great player, makes 9 times out of 10. Easy.
He did not have a good series.
No. So,
and you know, there's reports he could have been dealing with something. You know, Chris Domino told us yesterday he thought he was.
You know, too, because it can happen to anybody, right? He's going to be stinging because he is a great stand-up guy. Mm-hmm. And he may not have been playing 100%. You'll never hear him use that as an excuse. But you're also sitting there saying, I'm sure as you watch the game, well, fine, he makes that play, but what about the other 10 guys? You know, get the next guy out, get the next guy out.
Right.
And then they couldn't stop the bleeding. That happened to me as well. I pitched the game for Vanderbilt way back in the day against South Carolina, a really good team, at the grounds that is now called Hawkins Field. Back then it was called McGugan Field. Get this. I had the same thing happen to me. I pitched terrible, right? Mike Foltynewicz is not going to sit there and blame his whole summer, you know, the fact that he's done and for it, the winter on Freddie Freeman. He knows he's got to do better.
I thought that Foltynewicz pitched better than Fried did.
Yeah, Fried coming in and walking the pitcher was just awful.
That was bad.
But here's what happened to me. I had the same thing happen. Our team could have turned a double play, and we threw the relay throw into the dugout, and then South Carolina got a couple more hits after that, and I was out of there. You know, we go on to lose 21-1.
Yeah,
oh. 21-1, but for the pitcher, your mentality is not, hey, if they had just turned that double play,
right,
I'd have been fine, because
it's a team sport.
I had a lot to do with. I just didn't have good stuff. I got crushed, right? So everybody shares in it, but you know both of those guys, Foltynewicz, Freddie Freeman, and Max Fried are all sitting there going, I killed us. I killed our season, because that's just how you think when you're a competitor like that.
You know what the Freddie Freeman situation reminded me of? The first thing I thought of when he made that play and then just looking at the series as a whole was Game 7 against the Sharks, which turned out to be Shea Weber's last game with the Preds.
Yes.
Just a nightmare snowball,
same kind of thing.
And Shea Weber played like it's the worst game I've ever seen him play.
Yeah.
Which you didn't see that a lot, but it was just probably the worst game of his career. And that's how I know that stuck with Shea because that's the kind of competitor that he is. And I'm sure this is going to stick with Freddie Freeman because, you know, you got a long summer or a long winter now to think about things. And I think it's a talented team. I said to Darren earlier, you know, Brian McCann announced his retirement after the game that was, and everybody kind of figured that this was going to be a one and done kind of thing. He wanted to come home and then call it a career. He has a World Series ring that he won with Houston. So a very, very nice career for Brian McCann. But you hate, because he had his struggles too.
Right.
You hate seeing them go out like that. I hope Freddie Freeman can bounce back, which I think he will, you know, and be the leader of this team. But they got some big questions to answer now. Do they bring Josh Donaldson back? I would like to see them do that, but how much is that going to cost?
And what do you do with Austin Riley?
Well, I don't think you bring Nick Markakis back. And so Austin Riley could be in the outfield another year. He did okay.
Yep.
It wasn't a natural position for him. They have Christian Pache in the ranks that is one of the top prospects for the team and top outfielder. So that's something you have to look at. Ender Inciarte, you think he's going to be back. There is going to be a spot for him if all that plays
There's
out.
There's still a lot to like about their roster overall. It's just going to come down to it. Listen, down the road, out west, the Nationals have been through that, right? Mm-hmm. Year after year of playoff failure, and then boom, they have the breakthrough. So
they got to get
Braves,
a catcher.
The Braves, I think, the first thing, it says a lot that you're good enough to get back.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the Braves are positioned to get back there several times. Then it's sort of like hockey. You got to get it done in the spotlight. Now, how about what happened in L.A.? Last night. Can you believe that?
It was
a great game if you were not a Dodger fan, right? If you're a Nationals fan, it was euphoria because you've seen so many failures. But the shock of seeing Clayton Kershaw give up the lead on two pitches and your manager getting second guessed like he was, it's going to be one that they're talking about for a long, long time. And I, for one, did not have a problem with Kershaw coming back out there. He looked great blowing away that hitter to get Buehler out of the jam. By the way, Buehler, another outstanding big game performance.
That's who
fantastic.
I feel bad for, that they couldn't bring it home for him.
But going down with Kershaw, you know, can you really blame him? And I know people wrote all the other options they had and on paper, better options. Okay, I see that. But it's Clayton Kershaw, okay?
Right.
There's only so much you can second guess for that, but not putting Kenley Jansen in is inexcusable. In the 11th inning, is it the 10th inning? Right.
10th, yeah.
Joe Kelly throws the scoreless ninth. He looks great, and I get that, but he had not thrown more than an inning since August 24th, and you have Kenley Jansen, and it's not like you're on the road where, unlike Buck Showalter, who got killed a couple years ago for never putting in Zach Britton.
Right.
But he was the road team, so the mentality is we need to take the lead, and we're going to have to get the save whenever we take the lead. So I save him for when we get ahead, which a lot of people disagree with. Here, that situation can never come up. You're the home team. So you got to get him in there. What are you saving him for? especially after Adam Eaton walks in your face and Rendon and Soto.
I know.
I got it. If I'm going down, I'm going down with Jansen and not Joe Kelly.
I agree.
That was unbelievable. I don't think he's going to live to tell about it. I think he's going to be managing somebody else next year. Dave Roberts.
Really?
I think so. Because he was second-guessed a lot last year during the World Series for this. We'll see.
That's what I was going to ask.
He's a very respected guy, Dave Roberts.
So I was going to ask you about the managers. Do you think Snitker – I don't think you move on from him.
No, I think he's back. I like Snitker.
He's coming off a manager.
What did he do?
I think
they played well for him. I think he's well.
And they like him a lot.
I think he's a smart baseball guy.
He's been in the organization for 4 years.
He had to deal with the Acuña. I like how he came across in this series. I don't second guess anything he did.
But you think the Dodgers are going to have a different skipper, huh?
It's just my feeling.
Well, you know,
it's like Grady Little after the Pedro Martinez thing. He just was not going to make it through that. And I just think the Dodger fans, they have a great team. They'll be back next year.
Sure.
They'll be back. But maybe just somebody else pushing the buttons is what they need.
The Phillies will have a different manager.
They will have a different manager.
Gabe Kepler fired this morning. So there's your baseball. And then, of course, the Astros. The Rays coming up tonight.
And I talked to a friend of mine who works for the Predators, who's from Houston, big Astros fan. He goes, I wasn't nervous. I feel good about Gerrit Cole. Then when I saw the Dodgers lose last night, I was like, I don't know. Anything can happen.
ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Saturday night as Nashville SC takes on North Carolina FC at First Tennessee Park. I believe Max Herz will be on the call for that game.
And it will also be at Nissan Stadium.
It's a big house, baby.
Okay.
We're going big.
The copy is wrong. Pre-game begins at 6:30 with kickoff at 7, only on ESPN. 94.9 Game 2, powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. We'll come back, set you up for tonight's game. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 1025 The Game. Celebrate the grand opening of the brand-new state-of-the-art Ford Ice Center facility in Bellevue this Saturday at 2 p.m. There will be giveaways, free food, a free public skate, and kids' activities, plus Nash and the Preds Energy team will be there. That's the grand opening celebration of the new Ford Ice Center in Bellevue at 7638B Highway 70 South this Saturday at 2 p.m. Welcome back. Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Jared and the GM coming up in just a few minutes. Preds and Capitals tonight, Willie, and it looks like they are going to tinker with the lineup just a little bit. It appears Daniel Carr will be in.
Yes, that's one of the tweaks. Daniel Carr will be in. This is the first game of the four that they've made any changes on the forward units. And not only will there be different personnel, with Carr going in, Rocco Grimaldi did not skate this morning. I think it appears to be dealing with something physically. Yep. Because Grimaldi was playing well. But also, you know, I think there's a mentality or something to be said for using your roster.
Sure.
You know, Daniel Carr has earned a spot. You want to keep him in there. It's like, you know, it's not quite the same as baseball where you have 162 games and you absolutely have to keep your bench going. But, you know, you don't want guys sitting around too much.
But somebody you signed to a contract, the AHL MVP.
So Grimaldi's ailment is going to open the door for him. But the more significant move, I think, is switching Craig Smith to Kyle Turris's line with Daniel Carr. So Kyle Turris will have two different wingers, although Kyle has skated a lot with Craig Smith over the years.
Yeah.
And Callie Yarncroke goes up to play with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson. Now, when you take a little closer, because at one, you know, from one position, you're probably saying, well, why would you do that? But Craig Smith, his entire life, pretty much, has been a right wing.
Right.
He was trying to play the left wing to play with Johansson and Arvidsson. He's done fine. I think there's still, though, and you listen to Peter Laviolette, he keeps saying this. We still want to look at some different things. We want to see what is the best way to deploy this group. During the preseason, you saw Kyle Turris play on that left wing a lot with Johansson and Arvidsson. That could happen again at some point. But he said Craig Smith is still transitioning in learning how to play the left wing. It is a different position. It sounds easy. Some guys do it better than others.
Right.
Yarncroke is a guy that does it very easily. He can play either side and has done it throughout his career. So they're looking to get a spark of offense from Yarncroke, who has not really played great offensively going back to last year, where he
right.
dropped to 10 goals. And then he has, you know, he's had some chances that he hasn't buried so far this year, and they're hoping maybe this brings out the best in him.
I think this move is more about Yarncroke and less about Craig Smith. I know Craig Smith has been going through the transition of moving from one wing to the other, but Callie Yarncroke, they're just trying to get a spark under him and see, you know, see if they can get that offense back that he's had in the past. And what better way to do it than put him up with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson? So I was of the belief that if you were going to make this move for Craig Smith and you were going to have him on that line, that you need to just let it simmer for a while. You don't need to move things around. But if you're not getting much out of Kyle Yarncroke, then I think it's a good way to spark him. And Kyle Turris has been playing some of the best hockey I've seen him play in a long time. And so having him with somebody he's familiar with and Craig Smith on his natural side, I think is only going to help him. And then seeing what Daniel Carr can be.
Yeah, and I think what has been effective is you have the other team saying, okay, who have we got to stop? Who's their top line? All right, here's Johansson's line. We got to make sure we're on them. Okay, well, what about Duchesne's line? They've been the hottest line by far, Duchesne and Forsberg. Well, we got to put good players out there. We got to make sure we're aware. So what happens when Kyle Turris comes out there? They have better matchups, right, during the course of the game. They may be out there for less time, but they also might be out there against the lesser defensive players. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and they've taken full advantage of that, so...
Well, it goes back to
we'll see if they can continue to do that. Turris had the huge goal the other night. I think he has benefited so far. He's looked pretty good in the ice time he's had.
Yeah, I agree. And it was good to see him get that goal the other night. His confidence, I mean, the way if you talk to him in the locker room, I've had a chance to talk to him a couple times. His confidence is back. I chatted with Matt Duchesne that you'll hear tonight during the pregame show. Daniel Carr talked to Jeremy K. Gover, so you hear that as well. But Matt Duchesne, that was really my first time one-on-one getting to talk to him. I love how he carries himself and how you see the confidence just oozing off of him right now. So we'll see what happens. A tough test tonight. Ovechkin, only one goal so far. That scares me a little bit.
Big time.
But we'll see how it all shakes out.
Capitals have played four games so far. They're 2-0-2. All four have been decided by one goal. Three of them have gone to overtime. So the Capitals, I think, still a heavyweight. They're a little bigger and stronger. You know, they got your Tom Wilsons in there. I think it's a little different look than what the Predators have seen so far. We'll see how they adjust.
You will have the TV call tonight on Fox Sports Tennessee. Our coverage gets underway here at 6 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Darren McFarland. For Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, I am Chase McKay. Max Herz back in the studio. Stick around. Jared and the GM, that is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Closing time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer.